So as a nutritionist, one of the issues, well, the big issue with Enterococcus saccharum is that it translocates across the gut and travels through the bloodstream into joints. And so really, when you start noticing problems with Enterococcus saccharum, it's because the birds are showing lameness, either in the leg joints or very commonly in the free thoracic vertebra. It's not the causative organism of BCO, bacterial chondronecrosis with osteomyelitis, but it certainly is present in many of those BCO lesions.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. bioMérieux is a world leader in the field of diagnostics for more than 60 years. From pathogen detection to genomics and data applications, bioMérieux helps poultry manufacturers going beyond the test results.
You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins.
AB Vista offers pioneering products and technical services tailored to the poultry industry to help them succeed. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. Today, I'm here with Dr. Doug Korver. Welcome to the show as a guest on the other side, since you're usually hosting.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. It's a bit of a new experience for me.
Oh, I'm really excited to chat with you about a few different topics today regarding some gut health and some health challenges that are happening. Also, happy to hear about stuff that's going on in Canada, your neighbors to the north. I just think about everything that is happening down here and everything north of us. Man, I just don't hear much about it. So I love worldwide updates, especially for diseases and other things that are going on. So can you chat just a little bit about kind of the current health disease or other disease challenges that are I'll say at the forefront in Canadian health right now?
Yeah, so we deal with a lot of the same challenges that you would in the U.S. Of course, our climate is different, our industry is set up a little bit different, but we have the same genetics and, you know, are dealing with a lot of the same challenges, you know, particularly as it relates to a move away from growth-promoting antibiotics. And I think that's probably what a lot of our issues maybe are not caused by, but they're certainly impacted by the removal. So,
yeah,
you know, we deal with coccidiosis and necrotic enteritis and, you know, those kinds of challenges. And, you know, that's on the bacterial side. There's always viral challenges. In Alberta, we sort of have a couple of the major flyways. So during spring and fall migration, that's often a challenge with viral diseases as well. So
right now, it's major migration and everything that's happening. What have been the challenges with high path? I see in WAAG, they often say some things that are happening in Canada, and I haven't seen any recently described outbreaks, but I could also be behind the times. So what's high path avian influenza like right now up by you?
So we do have some active cases going on right now. It's certainly much less than it was a couple of years ago where we were having some major problems. So for us, fortunately, because we're in sort of the coldest time of the year, a lot of those viruses, the migratory birds have gone.
Yeah.
A lot of the viruses are susceptible to cold.
Yeah.
And so hopefully the cases that we've got are under control and we won't see that spreading any more than it has.
I can appreciate the cold for bacterial, viral, and other diseases, reducing those. So. Yeah, super helpful. So can you just maybe give us an idea of just in the poultry industry as a whole, and maybe you don't know exact numbers, but in the United States, we've kind of had this about over half of our industry is antibiotic free. Is that kind of the same in Canada or is it a little more extreme in one way?
Yeah, I'd say we're fairly close. Maybe if you want to call it lagging a little bit behind. I think part of that has to do with maybe some differences in what is and what isn't considered a growth-promoting antibiotic relative to you know use in human medicine. But the industry is certainly moving towards that. The Canadian, the Chicken Farmers of Canada have committed to eliminating the use of growth-promoting antibiotics. And so we haven't had that legislated, and the industry is certainly moving in that direction. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a good thing from a consumer perspective and consumer preferences. And as I mentioned before, it does bring on some additional challenges. So,
birds are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in their feed. Fumonisins are a highly prevalent mycotoxin that can impact health and performance. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services to assess mycotoxin contamination and solutions to combat mycotoxins. One of those solutions is Fumzyme, the only FDA-approved enzyme to combat fumonisins. Visit dsmfirmenich.com/Fumzyme to learn more.
Yeah, so from a nutrition standpoint, are you seeing the same changes where diets are containing a lot more probiotics or organic acids or other health supportive things other than antibiotics?
Yeah, so when we take antibiotics out, we can't just take them out because they are effective. And that's been one of the challenges is we have to replace them with something. Now, we can use biosecurity and sanitation and management and downtime and things like that as part of the solution. But really, when those birds are in the barn, it's not a sterile environment. And so with the stresses of rapid growth and sometimes variation in feed quality, there's opportunities. They're called opportunistic pathogens for a reason. And often that's the case. And so there are a large number of alternatives that have been investigated and have been used. I think the consensus is that there's no magic bullet that we take antibiotics out and put something else in, and we just carry on without looking back. So some of the challenges are that not every product works exactly the same in every environment. Not every environment has the same challenges, and so different combinations of products are more or less effective under different circumstances. And so, it takes a lot more care and attention, I think, to understand what the challenges in that particular production unit are at that particular time, and then strategically looking at what mechanisms might be useful in keeping those disease challenges in check.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of customization and trial and error.
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than just being able to put antibiotics in.
Yeah.
And because it requires multiple products, it becomes more expensive as well. So producers want to make sure that what they're paying to put in the diet is going to be effective or a necessary part of the solution.
So can you tell us a little bit about how Enterococcus saccharum has changed over time, especially with the change in antibiotic use and maybe some of the strategies as a nutritionist that you've used?
Globally, Enterococcus saccharum, it's always been around and has always been a commensal in poultry. But around 2002, it was isolated in Europe as a pathogenic strain. And since then, it's become more of a problem globally, including North America, the U.S. and Canada. I think the incidence has kind of tracked in Canada along with the U.S. And it's been a bit of a difficult pathogen to really get a good handle on. It's certainly transmitted horizontally. There's some questions about the role of vertical transmission in the incidence. It doesn't seem to be vertically transmitted to a great extent, but part of the problem is that it takes relatively few infected birds to broilers to cause a major problem. So it spreads quite rapidly horizontally. So it's hard to eliminate vertical transmission, but biosecurity is important, and getting a handle on where it's coming from is a challenge. And so just fundamentally, biosecurity is important.
So is this one of those problems, kind of like coccidiosis, that a couple of barns based on their location might consistently have problems with, or based on what you said for transmission, it kind of might come and go. I mean, is this something that reusing litter, we can compost out of the situation?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I'm not sure I have a good answer for it. So, you know, I'm a nutritionist, and so I kind of look at things from that standpoint. In my understanding, it doesn't seem to be something where once you've got it, you know, you always have major problems with it. It seems to come and go, and you know, you know, the sanitation, the downtime in between flocks is an important consideration as well, and not just for Enterococcus succorum, but other pathogens as well. If you can get a little bit more downtime, you tend to reduce the problems.
So with this particular pathogen, if maybe you can't do predicting or predictive measures, is this, could we support the birds in a reactive manner, or do we kind of alter diet prophylactically? Like, what do you do from a nutrition standpoint?
Yeah, so as a nutritionist, the big issue with Enterococcus succorum is that it translocates across the gut and travels through the bloodstream into joints. And so really, when you start noticing problems with Enterococcus succorum, it's because the birds are showing lameness, either in the leg joints or very commonly in the free thoracic vertebra. It's not the causative organism of BCO, bacterial chondronecrosis with osteomyelitis, but it certainly is present in many of those BCO lesions. So, you know, the joints tend to be pressure points. They tend to, you know, with rapidly growing birds, particularly heavy birds, they develop little microfractures, and bacteria in the blood can you know, hide away from the immune system in those microfractures, can grow and cause pathogenic changes in the cartilage in the bones. And because those joints are typically fairly poorly supplied with blood, you know, if you've ever had a soft tissue injury, it takes a while to heal from, in part because of relatively poor blood supply. So it's a nice environment for the bacteria to grow and proliferate and cause problems. And so when we see problems in the birds, you know, the issue's already happened. And so you know, in severe cases, it leads to birds starving out or being culled. And so really prevention is the key. And so most of my work in the antibiotic alternative area really has focused on gut health. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is we want to maintain good, healthy intestinal tracts so that we limit the bacterial translocation. And of course, that's important for lots of different bacteria, but particularly Enterococcus succorum.
So working with there's so many different feed additives that might change gut integrity. Are there certain categories or classes that you find to be more useful in this particular situation, or is it just very dependent on the actual presentation?
Yeah, I don't think we have a good handle on which additives are most effective in terms of Enterococcus succorum specifically.
Yeah.
But I always, you know, I look at, you know, we've got a range of different categories of products. And so again, the best combination of products really depends on what the challenges are and what works in your environment. So for example, you know, probiotics can work if you've got a gut or a feed disruption or you know, some sort of challenge to the microbial population. It can kind of help the bird ride through that period of stress, if we're not constantly feeding the probiotics, they tend to, you know, fade out, but they can get through challenging times. So at placement, or if you know, there's been a heat stress or something like that. Mm-hmm. Feed acidification, various methods of acidifying feeds, dropping the pH tends to make it more difficult for a lot of the pathogens to thrive and grow. And of course, you know, we don't, you know, there's lots of potential pathogens present in the gut, and they're there and they don't cause problems. It's when they have an opportunity to grow and proliferate and really take over that they start causing problems. So, you know, feed acidification is one. Various essential oils can be a useful product. Interestingly, we did some work. I had a graduate student that just defended in a couple months ago, and she was looking at gut health. And one of the things that she was looking at was glucosamine. So, you know, a lot of people take glucosamine for joint health. And that's certainly what we were looking at. But there is also there seemed to be an effect on gut health and reducing translocation of indirectly reducing translocation of bacteria. So, you know, I think there's the typical products that we look at. You know, I think enzymes to increase nutrient utilization and reduce the nutrients that are available to the pathogens. All these sort of standard products and maybe some novel ones that that we can use to maintain that gut integrity. And that's going to help with a lot of different pathogens. So if we can keep coccidiosis under control, for example, you know, there's an obviously tie into necrotic enteritis. But it also helps to maintain that gut barrier function and reduce translocation of Enterococcus saccharum, because it's going to be there in the digestive tract. It's just a matter of keeping it where it belongs.
Join the Poultry Science Association at our inaugural PSA Pacific Rim Scientific Conference, October 13th through 16th in Macau, China. Explore groundbreaking symposia and hear the latest research impacting the global poultry industry. Here is your chance to present your latest work, recruit future leaders, and network with other experts in the field. Help us shape the future of poultry science. Register now at poultryscience.org. See you in Macau.
So if someone wanted to evaluate this product in their setting, I mean, whether or not they have Enterococcus saccharum is one thing, right? But what are maybe some key indicators that you could give just in terms of gut health overall? Would you say you want to look at performance or mortality or maybe what the droppings look like? I mean, how does someone decide if they think this product is working in their setting? I think that's like the million-dollar question, but what's your thought?
It is, and you know, and that's something that that we've asked in my research group. You know, when you have a controlled scientific study, you have a positive control, you have a negative control. You can do a disease challenge with and without the products that are supposed to protect and really get a good handle.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go in and intentionally make their bird sick in a commercial operation.
No.
So really what's important, and in the field trials that we've done, and we've done several large field trials with integrators in Latin America, But there's some really key steps. One is you need to have good data control. So people need to buy in, and that goes all the way from upper management down to the people, you know, in the barns. They need to buy in and know what we're doing and know why we're doing it and why it's important that we do things the same way. So something simple like, how do you make sure that, you know, if you've got two barns on this feed and two barns on this feed, what do you do if one of the barns runs out of feed? Well, you know, the typical thing was, well, we got bins over here, we'll just move the feed over. Well, you want to be careful about maintaining treatment identity. And, you know, if things happen, we need to know. Tell us, you know, nobody's going to get fired, but we just need to know because it's going to help us interpret, you know, the data. One of the advantages of commercial trials is that you have real world situations and you have millions and millions of birds. So you don't have the level of scientific control, experimental control, but you know, if you have good baseline data and we make these changes in these barns, how do they compare going forward? You know, and there's geography and there's, you know, age of barns and layout and things like that, equipment. But over time, if with a well-designed field trial, and large numbers of birds, you can get a pretty good handle on, is this effective? And you know, subtle changes. So, okay, we're comfortable with these four products in the diet. What happens? We think this one maybe is not critical, so we're going to take it out. And then what happens? And then again, you've got your baseline. You compare your current results and ongoing results with your baseline. And do you see a positive change? Making good use of the data that you're able to collect. So we did a lot of work in processing plants. So you can pick up things with carcass yield that you might not be able to pick up just in feed conversion ratio. Now, often, you know, better feed conversion ratio, the birds are growing better, putting more protein and energy into muscle development. And so you often see the same changes in the same direction happening. So it's a challenge. It requires good management, but you can also gain a lot of really critically useful information.
Sounds like patience is also a patience in every way. Exactly. Well, is there anything just about Enterococcus saccharum or nutritional support of gut health overall that we did not touch on today that you either wanted to point out as a big thing or maybe just reiterate?
Well, it's interesting. I was talking to a physician friend of mine about this interview and Enterococcus saccharum. And as a physician, you know, he's thinking about Enterococcus in terms of hospital-acquired infections bacterial antibiotic-resistant enterococci, mostly Enterococcus faecium. It's interesting that in that context, Enterococcus faecium really started to develop antibiotic resistance about the time antibiotics started being used in medicine. What's interesting with Enterococcus saccharum is probably as the industry was starting to move away from antibiotics is when it started to be a problem. So I haven't been able to find a lot on antibiotic resistance. It's interesting to see, you know, disease has been treated. I mean, we continue to treat bacterial disease, clinical bacterial disease with antibiotics. So, you know, is that something that might be putting selective pressure on the population? So it's a question. I don't have the answer, but it's certainly interesting context. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you're doing work and small research scale and in the field, I think naturally when you plan these trials, you end up with more questions than you have answers for. That's your job security. Yeah, exactly.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Beringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available.
Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your partner for extra animal performance.
Beringer Ingelheim develops poultry vaccines of unparalleled quality with a focus on prevention and control across a wide range of diseases. We deliver unique, sustainable solutions for broilers, layers, breeders, and turkeys. Our veterinary network brings unsurpassed knowledge and experience, helping producers make smart, innovative, science-driven decisions to improve bird health and performance. For more information, visit poultryhealthusa.com.
So we typically wrap up by asking same three questions to everybody, but since you've answered them already, I want to hear a little bit of insight on the new or the updated NRC, since our current NRC is from the 90s. And we've had this in progress for a while, so I would love to hear an update on something, a poultry resource that people would love to use.
Yeah, so I don't know if there was a party, but the current NRC is from 1994, so 34 years old this year.
Yes.
And I've been part of the committee that is revising and updating that. It will no longer be the NRC because of changes at the National Research Council. It's now the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. So it will be the NASA.
Oh my! Report. Okay.
So we've completed the writing. The document's gone out for external review. We've responded to the reviewer comments, and it is undergoing formatting. And so we hope early in the new year it will be available to the public. So
yeah.
It's a greatly expanded book. So we've used it or we've taken the view that this will be used as a resource and a reference for government, for the legal system, for undergraduate and graduate education, for veterinarians. So there's a lot more background information and current information that's being provided in addition to the nutrient recommendations and requirements.
That is really great to hear. I mean, that you just must be like overflowing with excitement because this has been a work in progress for a long time.
Well, it was a huge project and it's been a lot of work, yeah. And a lot of people put a huge number of hours into it. So it's really fulfilling to be this close. And I say this in the best possible way, but we're going to be really glad to be done with it and have that product out there for people to use. So.
Gosh, yeah, it will be a relief, and I will be very excited to be able to cite the new recommendations as compared to having to cite the NRC and a breed recommendation, fully knowing that the NRC was quite out of date. maybe you haven't really thought about this, but was there anything during that process that was updated that was really surprising, or because you've been in the field of nutrition, you're like, yeah, that's different. I mean, was there anything that was like, oh, this is actually really a great update?
One of the challenges that we faced is there's not a lot of classical nutrient requirement studies being done. So,
yeah.
In some cases, we were quite limited as to what we could conclude.
Yeah.
Because if we're looking at different vitamin forms or different trace mineral forms, you know, it's this type of product versus that type of product. And maybe they're at a few different levels, but they're really not designed as robust nutrient requirement studies. And so we've had to develop recommendations in that context. One of the big recommendations that's coming out is really the need, the bird genetics change so much and feedstuffs change, fairly rapidly. So really what we're calling for is more of a modeling approach. So if we really understand the nutrient requirements for muscle growth and for gut development and for fat deposition and so on, we're less dependent on having to rerun all the same experiments with the new genetics.
Yes.
And we're more able to say, okay, now here's the change in body composition. What are the nutrients levels that are required to support that? So we don't have that information, but really we're hoping that becomes a more common approach in poultry nutrition research.
Yeah, I mean, that would be wonderful. That would help a lot of people make better estimations as well. Just, I mean, for the current genetics and the current feed stuff. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I am all for that. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today about some different health challenges that are common really across all of poultry production. But I love hearing updates from different places because we are an international audience podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Liz. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. So for all of our listeners, if you had a great time listening to this, like and share the episode because we love interacting with people who listen. So thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.